Welcome, everyone, to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. I am your host, Jimmy Trainor. Thanks so much for listening. Great podcast today. We have Jeff Van Gundy from ESPN, who's getting ready to call all the action from the NBA bubble as basketball begins. Well, I shouldn't say begins. It continues, returns for its season on Friday. And Jeff was outstanding talking about the bubble and The Last Dance and LeBron James and how he's going to be broadcasting in this wild situation. So really great stuff from Jeff on today's show. If you missed last week, we had Joe Buck on, who talked about baseball's return. 2 weeks ago, Jay Onrate from TSN Sports Center in Canada. 3 weeks ago, Jamel Hill. If you missed any of those episodes, go into the archives and give those a listen. Download, subscribe, rate, review. It all is very helpful. So please, if you can, do that subscription to the SI Media Podcast. All right, let's get to the very entertaining Jeff Van Gundy. All right, joining me now, second time for me on the SI Media Podcast. It's been a while. So glad he's coming back. And as he returns to the SI Media Podcast, the NBA returns this week, and he is ESPN's Jeff Van Gundy. Jeff, how's it going?
Good, Jimmy. Hope you're well.
I am hanging in there. How about you?
Yeah, it's obviously interesting times here in Orlando with the restart about to begin, and so much in our world is going on. So a lot of change, but it'll be an interesting start to the or restart to the season.
So usually, you know, we have a lot to talk about the NBA coming back, and usually sort of the way it works here on the pod is I like to build up to sort of the meat of the podcast and the really newsworthy stuff. But I'm going to get it going right off the top here because it's what everyone's talking about. Have you had the wings at Magic City yet?
You know what's crazy is my first inclination to think of was, oh man, you got to be able to come up with a better excuse than that. But then I had people from Atlanta sending me messages that said the food is really good there. And the one thing that I disagree with the NBA on is Lou Williams could have done the same exact action and not been photographed, and he would have gotten 4 days. Because he was photographed, he got 10. Mm-hmm. These other guys who have left, we don't know what they've done. And so I think it should be pretty much an across the board. If you leave for an emergency, which is obviously your right to do, this is how we have to quarantine to keep us all safe coming back. So I'm not sure I agree with the punishment in Lou Williams' situation.
But have you had the wings?
No. I don't.
Sounds like you got to get there.
Yeah. I mean, when people rave about a strip club's food, I mean, I'm not sure that's good or not good. I mean, that's interesting.
In all seriousness, I do agree that it, I mean, you know, it does seem like it was a lengthy time that they sort of shut down Lou Williams for that transgression, if you even want to call it that. I mean, you'd think, you know, if he's ordering food, he's in and out of there quickly. It doesn't seem like the most irresponsible thing to do. I mean, listen, who knows what ended up happening, but if you're just picking up food and you're in and out of there in 5-10 minutes, I do think he sort of got a bum rap on it.
Yeah, and I think this, the NBA is charged with something very difficult. They, as we've seen with the other sports, it's going to be hard, right? Unless the environment that you're living in is over the top restrictive. And right now, the players are living in an incredibly restrictive environment in the bubble here in Orlando. So I understand they have a tough job to do. And I don't even mind if they want to say 10 days when you come back, you have to quarantine. That should be based on science. What I don't like is in this one, he got 10 days, but these other guys who we have no idea what they were doing, they get 4.
Right.
That seems to me, and it cost Lou Williams $150,000, somebody wrote, because he's going to miss their first 2 games. So I just think the inequality of, I don't even want to say punishment, but of the quarantine time seems to me to not be based on science.
Speaking of science, you know, if you don't want to get into this, you don't have to, but you are a very opinionated person, which is why I think so many people enjoy your work. And I, and this does tie into what's going on with the NBA. I mean, can you believe, because you're also, I think you're a practical guy. I mean, can you believe that as we sit here on July 28th, after being in this mess since February, March, and you have the NBA players in a bubble in Orlando, that I saw a stat today that only 67% of Americans are wearing masks, you know, when they need to wear a mask. Like, how are we even at this point still?
I really don't understand that. I think as a country, we should have been given the truth about masks immediately. We should be required to wear them. And we should see it as an act of unselfishness that we all have each other's best interests at heart. I don't understand how this became an argument of liberty,
right,
and freedom. I mean, this is about helping each other through a really difficult situation. And I don't understand the unwillingness to participate in helping yourself and helping others. It seems like a very minimal thing to ask Americans to do. And I don't get it.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of what my issue is with it is, I mean, listen, I don't enjoy wearing the mask. It's not something, you know, I wear glasses, my glasses fog up. It's a disaster, especially in the heat. And you get out of the car, your glasses are fogging up, whatever. But you're going into a supermarket for 20 minutes, you can wear a mask. It's not like you're being asked to, you know, go fight a war somewhere.
No, it just seems like to me, sometimes when I hear these public service announcements about, you know, stay 6 feet away, wear a mask and wash your hands, I want to scream and say, I got it already. I got it. But obviously, we don't all have it,
right,
because we haven't been convinced that it's in our best interest and everyone's best interest to do these three things that obviously wouldn't eradicate the virus, but would help minimize the damage that so many people are doing. Now, obviously, there's a lot more to it. The lack of discipline from a lot of people right now, not just masks, but going out, basically defying. I read another one where there was a party of 700, you know, at an Airbnb. I'm just thinking to myself, what are we doing?
That's the exact, like, what are we doing? What, you know, when, you know, it's interesting too, when you see sports fans sort of complain about the mask, because all sports fans have wanted for the past 4 months was for sports to come back. And now, you know, baseball is a complete mess. The NBA obviously looks like they did a great thing by doing the bubble. Let me ask you this. When you start broadcasting, your first game is Friday. You and Mike Breen and Mark Jackson will have Bucks Celtics Friday night on ESPN. The season opens Thursday. Jeff and ESPN will get going Friday. What is your broadcasting setup going to be like in terms of where you'll be and, you know, in terms of, you know, with Mark and Mike?
So we did practice games on Saturday and yesterday. We did three total games. They weren't broadcast. We did some cut-ins both on Saturday and the Monday for the NBA shows, but we actually broadcast the games. And there's three arenas. We broadcast in two. And the basic setup is we're up off the floor. I would say probably if you were in an NBA arena where the second – set of seats would start, you know, so we're up pretty high and we're in thick plexiglass booth partitioned, you know, so we each have our own spot.
Okay.
And the setup, the amount of work that had to be done to get us on the air, I can't even imagine. Like I was saying to somebody yesterday, I can't even put together a chest of drawers. What these people behind the scenes are able to do and manipulate and the problems they troubleshoot and work through to just get these games on has been incredible. And so, yeah, I think we were going through these practice games, hopefully to get us back in a little bit of rhythm, but also I think to make sure that we could, you know, everybody who's undergoing all these changes because of the virus can do their job and we can put on a quality broadcast.
And what was that like for you in the practice games when you're in your own sort of, it sounds like the three of you are almost in like NHL penalty boxes, basically with the plexiglass and the separation. How was it when you were actually calling the game? Did it feel weird not being like right on top of, you know, Breen and Jackson, or were you able to do it? No problems.
No, it was a little bit, it's a little bit strange because used to be able to just like, you know, Mike would tap me on the arm to shut up or get back on track. And obviously he can't do that now. So now he's probably just going to try to stare me down through the plexiglass. But I think it is a little weird. But even weirder is the whole sterile environment and the lack of sound, fans, like when they come out to warm up, the introductions, all of those things to me have been, you know, really, really strange. And I think it's going to have an impact on the games. I hope it's positive. I hope that we hear things that we've never heard before that may give the fans a better inclination of what happens between coach and player, coach and official. And I think it's going to be fun. I do.
Yeah, I tweeted a couple of times and got some backlash because I don't like what baseball is doing, excuse me, with the cardboard cutouts in the stands and the piped in crowd noise. My perspective on it is sports is the ultimate reality show. That's why sports has a hold on this country, because you don't know what's going to happen. And what you see is what you get. It's in real time. It's live. And it's the ultimate reality show. I don't like that being compromised. My philosophy is show it as is and let the chips fall where they may. I don't know, in the NBA, I mean, I think it would be fascinating in the NBA to hear LeBron calling out defensive sets. And obviously everyone knows trash talking in the NBA are a beautiful combination, like peanut butter and jelly. So, you know, I would have liked it left as is, but I guess on the flip side of that, I mean, you go to an NBA game and there's music and noise throughout. So I guess you sort of have to balance it when it comes down to it.
Yeah. And I'll be interested, you know, they have a setup where there's participating fans virtually. I'm not really sure how they do it or if they're going to be able to create sounds. I think there's going to be like some groaning noises when a call goes against the home team.
Yeah.
Which I, you know, that sort of stuff, I'm not sure how it'll play out. I thought that, I was thinking last night that when they get to the final four teams, I think they should have a contest for those four teams. The most 10 most obnoxious fans, put them in the bubble and quarantine and bring them to the game and let them go nuts. I think it would be so much better than in that final four than, you know, however they do it, 2K type of soundtrack noise.
Right.
But again, these are things that smarter people than me have probably thought a lot about, a lot more than I have. So I'm sure there's problems with that too. But I would just love for in the final four if we could have some true fan noise.
Yeah. I agree with that. You know, anything better than the fake stuff, it would be better for me. How would you as a coach, obviously, you had a great run as a head coach. What would be your approach for the bubble? What would you be telling your players, you know, right now, 2-3 days before the season starts, about how to go about their business in terms of the actual game. When the game's going on, there's no fans in the stands. I don't know if that affects the adrenaline, concentration, anything like that. What, from a coach's perspective, what would you be telling players?
Well, I think the teams have all gone through their hardest 3 weeks where they were in the bubble with, like I said, very little to do, totally restrictive, and they had to last these 3 weeks when there are no real games being played. You know, three scrimmages, a lot of practices, and a lot of time that you're just trying to kill. Now, real games are starting, and they're going to be basically every other day, and sometimes they're going to be asked to play back-to-back in these eight games. And then the playoffs are coming. So you're going to be able to get into a rhythm, Jimmy, like as a player, and you can focus in on just the game.
Right.
That doesn't mean you won't miss your family, miss your friends, and still have time, a lot of time to kill. But I think those first 3 weeks were where the coach had a lot of problem. Oh, you know, a lot of problems to keep the enthusiasm level up, intensity up, being able to see the big picture. Now, you know, starting on Thursday, it's on. Right. I still think those top seeds from both East and West will take these seeding games, these eight games, as an extended preseason, while the other nine have to play like it's life or death. And I think it'll be an interesting contrast to how each team goes about these next eight games.
This is a weird question that I thought of, but I'll see if you think it's a ridiculous question, which please tell me if it is. I, you know, obviously with the condensed schedule, there's a lot of day games. And usually in the NBA, you only get afternoon games on the weekend, Saturday and Sunday, but you're going to have day games all throughout the week. Is that, will that be a factor for some of these players? Is that something they're going to have to get used to in terms of body training, stuff like that? Or, you know, because they play on the weekends in the regular season, it doesn't really matter.
No, I think it's a major factor. There's no question.
Oh, okay.
For some players, it will be more challenging. Now, people would counter and say, well, you guys practice in the daytime. And the good part about this is that they've had to practice at all odd times. And they've played some of their scrimmage games in those same time slots. So there's no normal. There's no routine in this bubble. So they've had to get comfortable being a little bit uncomfortable even before they play. But I had a few players, particularly in New York, that, man, 1 p.m. games, they were waking up at about 3. You know, it is challenging for some, and people's body clocks are all different.
Yeah. Well, it's with the bubble there, I guess it makes it a little easier because, you know, if Magic City is still open until 3 a.m., so who knows if someone could sneak out after, you know, if someone's done with their, you know, they have a 1 o'clock game, they're done at 4 o'clock, and then they don't play for 2 days.
I heard the only way out is swim across the moat with the Gators in there. And you know what? In a couple weeks, I wouldn't be surprised to see a couple guys putting on their Speedos and giving it a try.
NBA, all athletes are just not used to being that, you know, restrictive in their lifestyles, so to speak. And what about for you? I mean, did you have any pause about going into the bubble? There were some announcers, obviously they're older than you, but Marv, Hubie Brown decided to pass on the bubble. Were you a yes right from the get-go? Did you have to think about it?
I was a yes, but that doesn't mean I'm devoid of anxiety about the situation. This is, you know, Houston, where I live, is the epicenter of it right now. And coming into another hot spot, I think it would be naive to think that no one that we know, because we're not in the bubble, we're in a secondary bubble mm-hmm. that's a little less restrictive, but still restrictive, you know, that somebody could contract it and you could be exposed to it. And it's not lost on me how dangerous this is. And so I said yes right away because I think that was my obligation. And at the same time, I understand exactly
how devastating this virus has been and can be. And I don't take it lightly.
If you don't mind, give me and the listeners a little sense of what the secondary bubble is like. Can you go pick up food without a major, like, are you allowed to leave the bubble and, I don't know, go to a grocery store? What can you do in the secondary bubble?
So you can't go out and just suppose, you know, go pick up food, but you can have food delivered in.
Right.
And the one place that we can go is Disney Springs, which is open to the public. So that has me anxious. I somebody invited me to go last night to Disney Springs into the public, and I didn't feel comfortable with that. And I don't think I will. I have not been to a restaurant to sit down since this started, and I don't plan on going anytime soon. So again, it's a little less restrictive. You know, you can play golf here just like I guess the players can. And, you know, there's no security watching or anything like that. So it's really on your honor to do the right thing.
Yeah. And you will be very busy in the bubble because once the season gets going on Friday, I think you're calling 5 games in 3 days, which is pretty large workload. What do you think about all that work? And I guess you're going to have days where you call 2 games in 1 day. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, the only time I've ever done the 2 games in 1 day is Mark Jackson's first year as the Golden State coach. We did a game in the afternoon, and then I think it was a lockout year, and then we flew to Golden State. I think it was from Dallas.
Yeah.
And got there right before the game and did that. And it was fun. And I think, listen, there's a lot of downtime here with not a lot to do. So I'm excited about doing 2 games in a day. And I think the one person it's really hard on, though, is Mike, because he has to, you know, carry the load. And Mark and I don't have as much to have to say, so it's not going to be as challenging on our voices. But for Mike, you know, it's going to be a challenge. And he's so good, though. He'll come through, you know, fine. But I think we're all looking forward to the differences in this instead of, you know, whining about – can you imagine if somebody said, hey, we're going to pay you to talk about basketball, but you might have to do 2 games in a day? We'd have been like, yeah, can we sign up for that? So we can't lose sight of how good a job we have.
Right, right. And people will be watching. People will be tuning in, I think, in big numbers for these games. People
it's going to be interesting, I think. And will it sustain after the first weekend? We sure hope so. And I know the players, you know, hope that this goes over well and it's well received. And I have to say, the quality of offense by the individual players and by the teams, Jimmy, has astounded me in the scrimmages. They are playing – I thought it was going to be sloppy and disjointed. It's been anything but that. It's been very well played offensively. Now, I think just like most preseasons, you've got to ratchet up the defensive intensity. But I've been really, really pleasantly surprised by how well offensively these individuals – and teams are playing. So I think it's going to be good basketball to watch.
I was going to ask you just a couple of questions on actual NBA stuff here. Give me your opinion. One team that you think I don't want to use the word help. Help is not the right word. But one team that maybe the layoff and this bubble, whatever you want to call it, situation is, one team that might benefit from it and one team that could be hurt from it?
Well, I think it probably served Philadelphia well in that Ben Simmons got healthy.
Mm-hmm.
So anybody that had some injuries, obviously that's a help. But I also think Brett Brown really thought long and hard about lineup construction and putting Al Horford on the bench, starting Shake Milton as his point guard, sliding Ben Simmons up to a you know, point power forward position. I think I'm really interested in how they play. I think, you know, Toronto probably benefited as well
from getting some guys healthy. As far as who it would hurt, I think in general, if you are easily distracted as a team and you lack mental strength as an individual, and I don't really know that about those teams, I think you're going to see a team or two underachieve here just because they couldn't retain the level of enthusiasm and intensity it takes to play well when you're not living a normal lifestyle. And I don't know who it's going to be, but I am interested to watch which players rise up through different circumstances and which ones crumble.
That brings me to LeBron, who was, I think, on a mission this year before coronavirus hits, obviously after the bad taste of last year. And now since the bubble, we've seen him really, you know, if you're just going by what he says on social media, and I mean, I think you've seen it on the court too, in these exhibitions. LeBron is always on a mission, but he seems to really, the laser focus is even more ratcheted up, it seems like, for LeBron. Am I wrong in that assessment?
Well, I think this year his defensive intensity is much higher than it was last year. And I think he senses they have a real shot at winning it all. Last year, he had an injury, so he was limited in the second half of the season. And I think he came back rejuvenated, inspired, and he has played that way throughout the season. He looks, you know, like he is, understands he may never have a better chance than this year to win another championship, and you see it by his actions. And I, one of the great things that I was told long ago is your actions speak so loudly I can barely hear what you say. So I don't really listen to what a lot of these guys say because they know what to say about team play and committing and playing defense. But I look on the floor. And when you look on the floor, LeBron James, without uttering a word, speaks volumes about his level of commitment to winning it this year through his intensity and his effort.
Yeah. I'm going to switch gears, but also get back to LeBron in a way here. But the highlight of quarantine and the pandemic for sports fans was The Last Dance on ESPN. Did you watch it?
Not a second.
You know, it's funny because I had a feeling that was going to be your answer because obviously you lived through it, and yeah. You know, those you know, listen. This ends up becoming like this whole big thing, but you know, the NBA back then was a totally different animal, and for me, a much more enjoyable animal. But it's they announced the Emmy nominations today, and The Last Dance got 3 Emmy nominations, so I saw that and wanted to bring that up to you.
I heard it was very well done.
Yeah.
And like you said, I lived it. I knew the results of those games, and I knew about his greatness. So
yeah.
Like, to me, that was nothing of a surprise, but I do think I'm happy that it was made because younger fans who really didn't get to see him play, obviously, live, and who probably wouldn't take the time to go back and watch full games, could see in short snippets just how great he was. And, you know, like when you see highlights of this guy, when you think about what he was able to do and the efficiency he was able to play with, when the rules back then were more slanted or tilted towards the defense than the offense, and today it's just the opposite. The rules of the game are more slanted towards the offense than the defense. And when you think about not having as much room because the three-pointer wasn't shot with the same amount of the sheer numbers, but also you didn't have all these shooters on the floor for space. And then the level of contact that he had to play through, yeah, and him playing 82 games a night, for young people to see and
for older people to see, like myself, even though I didn't watch it, to be reminded of his greatness, I think is terrific, because he was in my time, in my era, just the difference maker. You know, you could play, you know, a great game and you're coming down to the end, and time and again, he would be the difference in these close games. And I have so much respect for him as a player and as a competitor.
Yeah, one of the best things for me, and I'm sure the people who are like 25 and under who proclaim to be diehard NBA fans were shocked at it. I mean, when they showed the old clips of him playing the Pistons and the Knicks, I mean, those teams just, I mean, they beat the living shit out of him on the court. You know, that's how the game was played. I mean, it just was, and it's a completely different time now. That was fun to go back and watch those clips.
Jimmy, if you did that today to like Steph Curry, you might be arrested in Golden State and ushered out. I mean, the amount of like the physical contact, and the one that I just remember, and it wasn't against Jordan, but it was John Starks basically tried to behead Scottie Pippen. I mean, today it would be ejection, suspension for 10 games. Right. I think it was just called a common foul. You know, it's just like, yeah, get up and make your free throws. And that level of contact day after day, year after year, that Jordan played 82 games and huge minutes, goes directly to his toughness, mental and physical toughness, his level of conditioning, and his competitive spirit. And, you know, there were a number, like, I have that same amazement level when you talk about Karl Malone, mm-hmm. and John Stockton, how few games they missed. Mm-hmm. Just amazing.
Yeah. And Patrick for the Knicks, Patrick Ewing. I mean, that was, I've always said, I feel like he's the most underappreciated New York athlete of my lifetime, because Patrick Ewing gave 100% every single night of every game he played in his career. And, you know, in the NBA, that's not always the case.
Well, I would say this. It wasn't just the games. It was practice as well. When your best player is as committed as Patrick was to winning, and we had an incredibly committed group, we fell short. But those players, led by Patrick, all always in my heart consider them champions, because they gave every single thing they had to trying to win a championship. Unfortunately, as Pat Riley often would say, some teams are just born at the wrong time.
Mm-hmm.
And we were born in that Jordan era, and we were great. And, you know, we just didn't have a guy who could go get a shot off the dribble. You know, Allen Houston came later in Patrick's mm-hmm. career, and he was that first guy that we had that could go get his own shot. So, yeah, I will always admire those Knick teams because literally no team invested more to trying to do the right things that lead to winning a championship than those teams. It was an honor every day in my 13 years in New York to deal with those players and with those coaches, because the commitment level was off the chart.
Yeah, and I feel like there's a little bit more of an appreciation as time has gone on. I just want to get you to say it. So why did you not watch The Last Dance, 1 second of it? Were you tempted? Did you? What was your mindset about that?
Well, it wasn't anything, you know. I mean, I love Madam Secretary, so if I was going to choose, I'm going to watch Madam Secretary. But I think, again, living through that, I mean, there were some great moments against the Bulls, and there were some, you know, incredibly disappointing moments. I choose not to watch, you know, Game 5, B.J. Armstrong's 3, Charles Smith getting fouled. You know, I choose not to watch that stuff. You know, I love watching old Knick games at times. But as far as that, I knew what a great player Jordan was. I knew how great a team they had. Phil Jackson, a brilliant coach. So I didn't feel that, you know, there was no desire to watch, but I heard it was great. And so many people, I think, benefited from seeing Jordan's greatness, even if it was in short snippets, but to really understand what a great player and what a phenomena the Chicago Bulls were back then.
But you didn't want to watch it all.
I had no desire. When I say negative desire, that's where it was.
Gotcha. You said Phil Jackson was a great coach. I've said this to you, I think, before when you were on the last time, but I will say it again. You calling him Big Chief Triangle is one of my favorite moments in Knicks history. This is why I asked about The Last Dance, and I'm going to tie it into LeBron. I love even though I was a diehard Knicks fan back in those days, and it was so painful to relive it, I love The Last Dance. From a media perspective, it was very well done, and, you know, like the old clips and all that stuff. What I hated about The Last Dance, there was one thing I hated about it, is it then became used in the Jordan-LeBron argument. Like when it would air every Sunday night, you'd have people saying, oh, LeBron could have never done this, or LeBron hasn't done this. And I hate the Jordan-LeBron argument. And The Last Dance was then used as a way to sort of knock down LeBron, which I find preposterous. I wanted to get your opinion on that.
Not to bore you with my sayings, but comparison is the thief of joy. And whenever you go through these sophomoric, like, comparative arguments, who's better when you're talking about the all-time greats, I'll give you first choice and I'll be happy with the second choice. And anybody trying to knock what LeBron James has done, it's just foolish. It's utter foolishness. Not only is he the great player that we see, and he could actually end up being the all-time leading scorer in NBA history, and it not be his best quality as a player, which is remarkable. Mm-hmm. In that, you know, his passing is by far his greatest skill.
Right.
But I just find, like, how he's lived his life. Like, why would we be trying to take away from a man who not only has accomplished so much on the floor, but he's lived this life of, in many ways, just he's such a giver of his resources to help others. And I think we should be applauding that.
Right.
So I don't like all these comparisons because they're both just, in their own era, they're both the dominant player of their time.
And here's the other reason why the argument is ridiculous. If you would like to argue that Jordan is better than LeBron, that's fine. So basically what you're saying is, you know, LeBron is not as good as the greatest player who's ever played the game. I mean, you know, and he's now second on the list. So, I mean, what are you really arguing?
Well, that was always my problem when we were coaching the Knicks, is people would say, Ewing's not as good as Jordan. Well, yeah, and put everyone else in that quality too. Like, oh, you mean he's only like one of the top 25 best players in the history of the game? Yeah, I think I can live with that as a coach.
Right.
So again, I don't understand people trying to pick at greatness. I don't. It's sometimes like we have such jealousy, and I do think it's a problem within teams as too. And I think you have to guard what you're trying to find is guys who can be genuinely happy for other people's success. Yao Ming, who I coach in Houston, the absolute best at that I've ever dealt with. Mm-hmm. You know, he could truly be happy for others' success. And I think that's what's missing. It's like, why can't we be happy for both Jordan's greatness and James's greatness?
Right.
Well, why do we have to pick between them?
Because we have this thing called social media now. Speaking of which, before I let you go, I got to ask, because your brother Stan recently joined Twitter. He is on there and he is on fire every day. Are you saying that? Is there any chance Stan could convince Jeff to join Twitter one of these days?
No, because I would lose my job in probably 12 hours. But I have had some
I didn't know he was going on Twitter. And I had a friend of mine in Houston reach out to me and said, hey, Stan is delivering some great messages, but he's tweeting at an alarming rate, yeah. right? And then Woj tweeted me and said, Stan's like the Kenyan marathoner who starts off sprinting his marathon and you think there's no way he could keep it up, but he's still running that fast at mile 20. And you know, the one thing I'm proud of Stan is that he's not speaking from or tweeting or whatever you want to call it from ignorance. He studies these issues. He reads a lot. He's into it. And he and his wife are invested in so many things, whether it's elections or he taught at a prison these last couple of years and had me in as a guest speaker, which was a remarkable experience for me. So he puts his resources behind what he says, and he also studies up on this stuff. So not everyone will share his ideals,
right?
But I'm so proud of him that he cares so deeply about our country and about studying the issues before us.
Yeah, he's been great. If I don't follow someone that I like on Twitter, the reason 99.9% of the time is because they tweet too much. I can't follow people who tweet too much because it gets to be. So if you do speak to him, say to him, you know, like, you've heard some feedback, slow it down a little bit, keep it going. You know, the messages are great, but you know, he's going to burn himself out.
Is my daughter, who's older, she's like, 24.
Right.
She said, and I don't know if these terms are right. I don't even know if I heard them right because I don't understand this stuff.
Yeah.
But she goes, he's clouding my feed because the yeah. last 10 are Stan and I can't find other people's.
Right.
And right. so
yeah.
I don't know if I heard that right.
No, you heard it right. Yeah, that's accurate. Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, I'll try to give him a heads up that he's got a, what do you think is a, like, should he cut it down to a certain number, like four a day? Like,
no, that's, he could do more than four a day. You know, I would keep it to like maybe eight a day.
Eight a day. All right. Yeah. I'm going to give him that. Yeah. I'm going to give him a number.
Yeah.
And I'll keep track of it. You should have a way from, like, you should be able to turn it over to your, Twitter manager that he can cut you off at a certain number a day. Nope, that's your allowance for today. So make them.
Well, count. They do have Twitter actually. I don't know if they still do, but at one point they did have like a limit. Like if you tweeted like, I don't know, 100 times in an hour, then they would say like, you can't tweet anymore for a certain amount of hours. You've hit the limit or something like that. I don't know if they still had that, but they did have that at one point.
Put in the Twitter penalty box.
Yes, that's it. People would say, yes, people would say I was in Twitter jail. That would be the phrase that people would use. Yeah.
Oh.
All right. Well, speaking of jail, enjoy the bubble there in Orlando and looking forward to getting the games back. I appreciate you coming on. Really enjoyed this conversation and, go get some wings at some point from Magic
City. That's it. That's it. All right. Take care, Jim.
Thanks, Jeff. Appreciate it. Okay, my thanks to Jeff Van Gundy. Absolutely loved that conversation. He was great. Looking forward to hearing him and Mike Breen and Mark Jackson call some NBA action when the league returns. ESPN, they get that game on Friday this week if you're listening to the pod as it first comes out. Really good stuff there from Jeff. If you're a first-time listener, please subscribe to the podcast. It helps tremendously. And if you can rate and review, that helps too. But subscribing is really helpful. And if you missed any past episodes, Joe Buck was on last week. 2 weeks ago, Jay Onrate. 3 weeks ago, Jamel Hill. So give those a listen if you missed any of those. Again, my thanks to Jeff Van Gundy. Really, really fun interview. And we'll see you next week right here on the SI Media Podcast. Take care.